Hi, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balogi. It's good to have you with us. It's been a little while since we've done it, so good to be speaking with you again. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Balogi, RyanBalenGee, and you can find Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. We are available on Amazon and Roku TVs. You can download our apps there. Links to that are on our website, golfnewsnet.com. Happy Election Day. Today is November 6th, 2018, so if you listen to us in the United States, hopefully you are going to vote today, or you voted on this day when this was recorded. If you listen to it later, democracy is an ugly, messy, but beautiful thing, and hopefully you take advantage of your right and your privilege, and frankly, your civic duty to go vote. I don't care who you vote for, but I care more that you vote and participate in our democracy, representative democracy, more than anything else. So, on to the golf. We have an interesting couple of weeks kind of coming up here. We're at basically the tail end of the golf year. We have two more events remaining on the PGA Tour schedule. We've got the Mayakoba Golf Classic, which used to be known as the OHL Golf OHL Classic at Mayakoba. And they changed that to the Mayakoba Golf Classic because I guess OHL, whoever that is no longer the sponsor of the event, just the Mayakoba Resort. And then we've got the RSM Classic on St. Simon's Island at Sea Island, which is very confusing, by the way. That's next week. And that's the end of the PGA Tour calendar year of official events. And then on the European Tour, we have the Nedbank Golf Challenge this week in South Africa. And then next week, they wrap up their season, the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai, to end the year, end the race to Dubai, and figure out who wins that points race. On the LPGA, we've got 1 week remaining on their sprint around Asia for their fall Asian swing. Then they come back to the United States, and they'll have the CME Group Tour Championship and end their season. So they're at the end. This week is the end for PGA Tour champions. They are out in Arizona for the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. So it's all kind of coming to a head here. Golf is ending for the year. Of course, there are silly season events. We've got the pay-per-view match between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. We've got a bunch of other stuff kicking up almost immediately on the European Tour. We won't see the LPGA Tour again until the new year. We won't see the champions again to the new year, but they have a qualifying school. We've got Q School for the Web.com Tour wrapping up. So there really is a lot going on, and I don't know how much you care about it. I mean, it's up to you, I guess, how much you want to care about golf pretty much after the Ryder Cup, or for some people after the PGA Championship, although that marker has to change, which is kind of interesting. So I feel like over the last, I mean, basically my entire life of watching golf, the PGA Championship has kind of been the line of demarcation about whether you care, really love golf, or you just kind of like golf. Because if you watch golf after the PGA Championship, historically, that meant you watched the PGA Tour's events in September and October and November, and those events, even predating the concept of the FedEx Cup, weren't really that important. I mean, they just weren't. They didn't have a big purse. They were kind of just for guys to get to the end of the season and maybe hang on to their tour card, even back before they started doing this wraparound season. And now those events are not worthless. They are half of them are part of an Asian swing that's set to get bigger next year, with an event likely to come to Japan, a co-sanctioned event or a sanctioned event, new event outright, one or the other. But you've got three events there now with a purse of at least, the CIMB is the straggler, I think it's $7 million. You've got a $9.5 million CJ Cup purse. You've got a $10 million WGC HSBC Champions purse. And then you've got pretty decent purses over here on this side of the world. We had a $7 million purse over the weekend in Las Vegas, and I think it's pretty much the same for the Mayakoba tournament this week. So these aren't throwaway tournaments. There's plenty of money offered for them, and they offer full FedEx Cup points. And they give opportunities to kind of two sections of guys, depending on where the tournament is. If you were a high finisher in the FedEx Cup in the previous season, you get paid off with guaranteed money if you play the Asian swing events. There's no cut in any of them. So if you get in them, you get free money and free lodging. And there's just no point in not at least taking up two of those events if you can. And then you have the other group of guys who maybe get into Safeway, maybe get into Vegas, certainly get into Sanderson Farms if they wish, probably get into Mayakoba. For the most part, you're going to get, I mean, you're pretty much going to get into RSM no matter what. I think it's a full field on two courses, so you have no business to not play in it. And those, again, purses, they're not the $9.5, $10 million variety, but they're very strong. They're good money, and they're an opportunity to earn those critical FedEx Cup points so that when you turn the page on the calendar into January of next year, you're not way behind the eight ball. Because if you just got your card through the Web.com Tour or the Web.com Tour Finals, you're setting yourself up to walk into a reshuffle at the end of this portion of the season. And if you don't earn plenty of FedEx Cup points, your season is in trouble already, because you're going to go through more of these FedEx Cup point resets, the priority resets, through different points of the season. But through the first one, if you're not in good standing, you lose access to a variety of tournaments at the beginning of the year. You lose Sony, you lose Career Builder. Phoenix and LA are pretty popular, so if you're not at the higher end, if you're not doing well in the priority ranking through that first reset, you're probably not going to get into those. So you're struggling for starts until you kind of get into the Florida Swing, and then it kind of starts to bounce around a little bit because not everyone wants to play every Florida Swing event. So you can kind of get into two of those if you're someone struggling on priority order. But it really, I mean, the first eight events mean so much to the season of a player just coming off the Web.com Tour or the Web.com Tour Finals. If you're not performing, you may find yourself well behind the eight ball, and you're going to play sporadic golf for the next 2 to 3 months, if not the next 4 to 6 months, if you don't bang it out really well when you get those starts in January, February, March, April, in that time frame. And then by the time you get in the kind of middle part of the season, in between all the majors, where the top players really are picking their spots, I mean, they're playing majors and WGCs and invitationals, and that's it. So, you know, a lot of those guys are going to have to wait for the John Deere Classic and the new Detroit event, the Quicken Loans event. You're going to have to wait for the 3M Classic. That's a new event. You're going to need those to be able to try and round up points and save your status. So these next couple of weeks are really big, not for guys who are at the upper end of the official world golf ranking and that you fully expect to get to at least the first stage of the FedEx Cup playoffs, now that there are only three of them, and probably get through the first two stages. You know, those guys, they're fine. They don't have to play a whole lot of starts. They take their free money, they get their free points, they get on the board, and they go home. And they can kind of make it up as they need to throughout the year, because they're going to get into WGCs, they're going to get into events where it should be really easy to make the cut. So the points are there for the taking. They're fine. But it's really worth paying attention these next couple of weeks to the guys who are trying to get through this first reshuffle in good standing and not have to worry about points for the remainder of the year or for the rest of the reshuffle. It's just so huge, and so many people don't realize it unless you're kind of living it, unless you kind of know it and you're a big super fan. So in one sense, it's weird to have these really good events with good purses and important standing, and hardly anyone's watching them compared to a network TV audience. I mean, maybe, I would guess, a couple hundred thousand people domestically probably watch the Asian events at best, and then the Las Vegas event, the California event, you know, Napa, these next couple ones that are on North American time. They'll probably get, 300,000-400,000 people to watch those, which is nice. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that for a fall event, but there aren't going to be a lot of people checking those out, and they're so important. They're really incredibly important to the livelihood of these guys. So if you have time over the next couple of weeks, even if you're just watching the final couple of rounds, like a little bit here and there, Saturday and Sunday, I would encourage you to do it and not pay attention to the stars in the field. Pay attention to the guys who are trying to get themselves in position through these reshuffles to make sure they either improve their lot going into calendar 2019 or just try to hold their spot so that they make sure they're getting into as many tournaments as they can from their priority category, and see where that shakes them out by the time they get through the summer. So lots to play for in the next couple of weeks, even though there aren't going to be a whole lot of eyeballs on golf. I did want to talk a little bit about my trip to TPC Denzante Bay and the Villas del Palmar in Laredo, Mexico. We did the last podcast we did was basically about playing Riviera, and got a really nice response from that. And I hope you enjoyed kind of the outline of that round. But the whole point of that podcast was actually to be a two-parter of, hey, I played Riviera and I played this incredible place in Mexico, and didn't get to talk about it. Kind of put it on the back burner a little bit. So this was over Columbus Day weekend, and over the years, my wife and I, even as we've had children, have tried to have some kind of Columbus Day weekend plans, whether we go, oftentimes we've gone to Myrtle Beach, where I'm actually going this weekend, alone with golf buddies, not with my family, but we've gone there, we've spent 4, 5, 7 days there, just to kind of get away from it all, and have a nice little fall vacation before winter starts to manifest itself, and days get shorter, and get, you know, all that stuff that kind of, ugh, I hate about winter. And we haven't done that since we went to Myrtle Beach in August with that big group of 26 of our family. We weren't going to go back. And my wife had a work trip scheduled, and I was going to go to try to go to Los Angeles and spend time with Josh Jacobs, who was my shepherd, along with member Pat for Riviera. And I was going to go out there not that week that I went to Mexico, but the following week, and go out there with him and a buddy of ours, Kevin Frisch, and do up a bunch of LA country clubs and just have an awesome time celebrating Kevin's 50th birthday. But my wife had that work trip, so unfortunately, this kind of worked out that I was able to go on this trip to Mexico. I had not renewed my passport in a few years. I probably should have always had it, but I didn't have any international travel on the horizon, so I didn't really worry about it, but renewed it, and then did the flight out to LA, and set it all up with the folks who were running the trip, Hunter PR. They're very good folks, and kind of pull the curtain back a little bit on the industry, but they run trips where media members get to go and experience these places, and typically you're asked to produce something, some kind of content in return, and in exchange for having a very nice trip paid for it, and kind of getting your butt kissed a little bit by the resort and the folks who run it. They're hoping for your kind of promotion for them. So basically it's a little quid pro quo. They're not advertising with a website or a blogger or magazine or whatever. I mean, they may, but in this case, their advertising budget is really getting you to come, and they're hoping the free pub will amount to advertising. That's how it works. And I've always been pretty open about that. But, so I was like, okay, well, I don't do many of these. I do maybe one a year, the last couple of years. And some are organized, some are not. Some's one day, some's a couple days, some's self-directed. But I wanted to go and check this place out because Eric Hart, who writes for us, went down there for the opening last year. And he said, it just what he wrote and the pictures he brought back and used in our piece, it just sounded like a dream boat. Like I wanted to go and go experience it. And so I did the day in LA, came back to LAX the next morning and fly Alaska Airways from Los Angeles to Laredo, Mexico. Now, first of all, I love Alaska Airways. Sneaky good airline. I only ever fly them in weird situations. I feel like more often than not when I go to Los Angeles, I'm flying Alaska Airways for some reason. But when I have flown them, the experience is always good. Always good. I wish I could fly them more often. I'm being absolutely truthful about that. So apparently the guy who owns the resort, he's an American. His first name's Owen. And he lives in the San Diego area. And he developed this resort outside of this Palmar group, and he decided he was going to build this on his own, with his own cash and his own financing. And he worked with Alaska Airways to get flights to come in, one flight a day throughout the weekend, to come in to Laredo, this airport in Mexico. The city of Laredo, I think, is the oldest settlement, the oldest settled town, at least still existing, in Mexico. And so it's about 7 hours by car from Cabo, which is the absolute tip of Baja California. You go up the East Coast. I mean, the roads are obviously not very good. It's really not that long of a distance, but the roads are not that good. So, obviously, they wanted you to fly into Laredo, because then that way you wouldn't have that long of a car ride to get to the resort. And so we flew into this airport, where all the media people who are going on the trip are on the same flight. And we get in the plane, and we take the 90-minute ride. First of all, we had to try landing twice because the pilots were afraid they were going to kill a bunch of flying birds just below the plane when they were trying to drop down to hit the tarmac, which I thought was frightening but very courteous. So anyway, we come back around, hit the tarmac, go down the runway, head in. They park the plane. There's no gate. It's not like your traditional American airport gate where you go toward the gate at the airport. They kind of move out that thing so that you can get into the airport and step off the plane and they go right into the airport. They don't have that. So you get off the plane the old school way with a set of steps and then you walk into the airport. So now you're officially in Mexico and you walk basically into this hall. It's kind of like the weakest form of TSA security ever. And you have your form filled out. You walk in. They kind of do your passport checks, stamp your declaration, all that stuff, or stamp your visitor form, whatever it is. And then there's literally one baggage claim, and it's glass. The walls are glass on the outside, so you can see the baggage is coming in and going around. And so you pick that off, and you go into the declaration part. Do you have anything to declare? No, I have nothing to declare. And then they have you hit a red button, and I was very confused at first what the red button meant. And the red button was a randomizer. So when you hit the red button, it was green, you just took your bags and went. You're in Mexico, congratulations. If you hit the red button and got red, then they ran your luggage again to check, I guess, for stuff that was banned from coming in, whether that's produce or animals or drugs or other stuff. Cash, a lot of cash, I guess, if you have more than $10,000 in cash. So I got green and go outside into the terminal area into the waiting area. So we take the resort bus over and have this very verbose tour guide, really nice guy, hands out some tecates, people who want to drink beer, drink beer, people who want to drink water, whatever. And he's kind of giving us a tour a little bit and playing what I think he believed were songs Americans would really like. And it was just all over the map. And it was like Doors. There was a bunch of doo-wop music. There were the Stones. I mean, it was a little bit of everything from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. It was kind of bizarre, but kind of fun too. So anyway, we pull off the road and go into what is apparently the entrance to the resort. And it doesn't seem like there should be a resort here. I mean, you kind of go off this two-lane highway, which they've been working on to make it four lanes, and you turn off of it, and you're like, this is just like a dirt path. Like, where the hell are we going? And then you see the traditional kind of Mexico resort arch. Like, if you've ever been to a resort in Mexico, every one of these places has some kind of arched-type gate that you go into, even though you could easily just run around said gate, or if you went to barnstorm it, you would just drive around in your four-wheel vehicle, and it would not stop you at all. And so we drive through it, and we're still going up, 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 up in this like dirt road, and you kind of go over a small crest in these mountains that ultimately shroud the resort, and then you kind of come over, and they're like, oh, that's where we are. We're here. And this property, the Villas del Palomar, is 10,000 acres. Most of it is probably outside of those mountains, beyond those mountains. So those will eventually be probably home sites that are developed in some way. It's just kind of how that type of thing works in Mexico. And we take this car ride again. We're still in the van. The road is not paved at this point. So they've got the road marked out. They just have never paved it. And you go into the building of the resort. They wash your hands with a fragrant, lemon fragrant water and a traditional Mexican hospitality welcome. And we get set to go into our rooms. And they give you a wristband. And they're like, this is your room key. And your room key for the entire visit. and it's an RFID tag inside the wristband. And they put it on you, and now this is how you get in and out of rooms. Now, if this were my honeymoon with my wife, or I were in Cabo, or whatever, that would have been extremely helpful, because I would be drinking a lot, and sometimes would probably forget my key. But I didn't drink a lot on this trip, hardly drank that much at all. And I didn't really need the RFID tag, so that kind of got a little bit annoying. But you get into the room, they put us in this beautiful set of rooms, a nice one-bedroom apartment style with a kitchenette, with this huge balcony, and you get out there and you see this spectacular view of the Sea of Cortez, which is the space basically between, Baja California and the rest of Mexico. That's kind of part of that, so that's where we are. And there are a bunch of islands out there, and they're like, yeah, later in the week we're going to go out there. And the resort has five pools, and they're kind of in the shape, or one, two, three, four, six pools in the shape of a turtle, if you look at it from above. So a big central pool, and then five other pool-type things, two pools, a volleyball pool, a hot tub, huge hot tub, biggest hot tub I've probably ever seen, and a kiddie pool as the head, which I thought was cool. And so go out there right away, get in there, get relaxed, you know. It's been a long flight, long day. After I call my family, go down there and check it out. And so next day, we're going to go play our first round of golf in the morning. And we're going to try to play three rounds of golf. We're going to try and play one on Friday, one on Saturday, and nine holes on Sunday. That's the original plan. And we go to dinner, and someone, I forget who, on the trip was saying, hey, we're going to get a hurricane tomorrow. I was like, what are you talking about? I had no idea there was a hurricane coming. And they're like, yeah, there's the remnants of this tropical system that's going to hit the other side of the coast, the other part of Baja California, the west coast. It's going to make its way here tomorrow. We might not be able to play golf. I was like, oh, that, whatever. That'll be fine. We'll be okay. And then we go to sleep, and I fell asleep on the couch first in the apartment. I think I was watching the CIMB Classic or something else, CNN, or I was flicking between the two, just trying to catch up with the world. And then went to bed and woke up. I had an alarm set, so woke up and opened the curtain. And oh my gosh, it looked like, I mean, before I put my contacts in, it looked like the world was falling apart. I figured you could see all the wind blowing the palm trees, and it looked like it was really, like it was a tropical storm, and I've been through some. So I kind of knew what I was looking for. It's like, that's pretty bad. We might not play golf today. I was like, but I'm going to get dressed to play golf, because what else am I going to do? That's what I'm here for. There are three buildings for this resort, so you're either going to stay in your condo all day, you're going to go to the pool, or you're going to go play some freaking golf. Because with the wind, what it was, you weren't going to go to the beach, you weren't going to go swimming in the ocean, you know, in the Sea of Cortez. So those were your choices. And then we kind of got a sense of the wind, and we're like, all right, well, let's try. Let's just try and go play golf, and we'll see how it works out. And that's where I'll pause to tell you about our new sponsor, AutoSlash. AutoSlash is a new service that I've recently discovered, and it's helped me and will help you make your travel easier and more affordable. I travel pretty regularly for this gig. I travel to golf tournaments. I travel to destination resorts, obviously the topic of this podcast this week, main topic. I travel to other golf events for the equipment industry, all kinds of other things. And almost always I travel by air, and I almost always wind up renting a car. It's just kind of how it is. And it is annoying. I almost always have to look for the best rate, either to save money for myself or if an agency is paying for it. But it is typically a guessing game of where and when to book. And with AutoSlash, that's all changed for me. AutoSlash is a free service which makes sure you get the best possible rate when you need to rent a car, even after you book. So AutoSlash saves you money in two separate ways. When you go to book your car rental, AutoSlash will search all the car rental providers at your pickup location, whether that's the airport, whether it's an off-site location, whether near the airport, whatever it is, and they'll do that to find you the best rate available And they will do that by applying every possible coupon code and discount available to you, whether that's one that's available publicly, or if you're a member of an organization like AAA, or you're a member of Costco. You might be able to save money on a car rental and not even know it, but AutoSlash does and will ask to make sure they're getting you the maximum discount possible in your car rental. Then, after you do the booking, AutoSlash will continue looking for best rates until you pick up your rental car, even to the day you pick up your rental car. So rates can drop without warning. This has happened to me multiple times in the past, particularly in Las Vegas. And AutoSlash is there to make sure you're better aware of your best rates possible through not only your rental company, the one you picked when you booked, but also other companies that might be able to offer you a better rate on the same car you're looking to get. So you can book and rebook and continue to rebook to save yourself the most money possible. In addition to helping you save big on your pay-at-the-counter rentals, AutoSlash also offers what they call slash deals for big discounts on those prepaid rentals, and they're totally refundable, which is a great thing about them, up to 48 hours before picking up. So instead of booking through like a hotels.com where you got to pay for it all up front and you got to eat it if you don't use it, you can get your money back with AutoSlash. Love that. The average AutoSlash user can expect to save 30% or more. That's a lot of money on your rental, especially over the course of a week. And that's money you can use to have a little bit more fun on your vacation and your travels. So try AutoSlash for yourself. It's free, quick, and easy. Head to AutoSlash.com. Tell AutoSlash your location and your planned travel dates, as well as your potential membership discounts, and then let it do its work. Before you know it, you'll have an email with mind-blowing rates for your rental. So try it for yourself one more time. That's AutoSlash, AutoSlash.com. So we decide we're going to play golf after breakfast. We get in carts that are laid up for us at the front of the resort. So it's less than a 45-second golf cart ride from the front of the resort to the driving range for the golf course. And we get up there, we meet Danny Garcia, and we talk to him for a little bit. The power is going in and out in their little, the temporary clubhouse that they've built, because the wind is blowing so hard. But Danny's like, you know, it's going to be fine out there. It's 75 or 80 degrees, even with all of this wind and all of this tropical stuff coming through. He's like, well, let's go hit some balls out in the range. So we go on the range, and it kind of reminded me of Cascada. If you've ever been to Cascada in Las Vegas, you may not have been. You probably have not been. But if you've been to Cascada in Las Vegas, you know what I mean. Cascada has this awesome driving range where you're kind of hitting uphill a little bit. I mean, it's a flat area, but it feels like you're hitting uphill. And there's a big waterfall in the mountains behind the back of the driving range. And that waterfall actually winds up going through the Cascada clubhouse. It is sick. But it's a really cool warm-up experience. And this was the same way. It wasn't a fountain. There wasn't a waterfall at the back of the range. But you were kind of hitting up the mountain. And ultimately, you learn that kind of backs into what is the sixth and seventh holes once you get over the mountain. And it's a really cool scene. But we were just kind of laughing at each other the whole way, because the three of us that were playing together that day or that morning, because you would hit a golf ball in the range, and it would kind of go up, and we were hitting into the wind, and it would just get caught, pop it up, and drop it down like on a cloud. And you're kind of laughing, thinking, there's no way any of us have a good round today. And we drive over to the first tee, all right, let's do this. And as it turns out, the way the golf course is set, Reese Jones designed this golf course and routed it around kind of the base of these mountains. So the wind, and this is particularly true on the front side, the front nine, the back nine kind of changes more toward the beach. But the wind kind of tunnels around the base of the mountains. So there are so many holes where it's downwind. It never felt like it was in your face, because the wind just kind of kept moving around the mountains. It was really cool. So the first tee shot's downwind, second tee shot somehow downwind when you change direction. Third tee shot, the par 3, which is a great little kind of cape-style par 3, that felt downwind. Then you got to 4. That was downwind. That was a downwind, downhill par 4 is 350. And I think it was the second round, maybe it was the third round, whatever it was. I drove the green because it was just pushing the ball so far. And you kind of go through these first few holes, you're like, how is it downwind every hole? And then you just kind of not question it. Like, okay, well, at least it's not in my face. You can still play golf. And the second hole is really the first kind of view that you get of how beautiful this place is. Because you kind of stand up on the green, second green, third tee, very close areas to each other, obviously. And you look down the fairway of the second hole, par five, and you see the resort, you see the Sea of Cortez, you see the islands, a couple of them. And you're just like, wow, that is stunning. And we play three, we play four, we get to five. That's the next par five. It's a par 72, so two par fives aside. Again, another downhill tee shot, centerline bunker, plenty of space. It's a resort course, after all. Plenty of space to hit it. And what do we see? A freaking rainbow, man. A rainbow. It's just, it was really cool. To be able to, I've never hit into a rainbow in my life. I kind of have my Davis Love 1996 at Winged Foot moment. And just hitting drives into that, just, it felt, every once in a while, I mean, I'm a Christian guy. I've kind of been jaded over time by religion and all kinds of things. But every once in a while, there is kind of this acknowledgement in nature that, there has to be something. There's got to be somebody can in charge here, and that made me feel that. And it's the second best view on the course, in my opinion. I think Eric Hart would tell you it's probably his third or fourth favorite, but my second favorite. You're standing up high, you can see everything. It's just a stunner. And so the next hole I drove the sixth green, which was like 340 yards. Again, it just felt downwind, and I hit it, got a good bounce, hit the green, made a 45 footer for eagle, and I was 300 through six. I thought I was going to shoot the course record. I wound up shooting 77, so that did not happen. But there were kind of some transition holes. I screwed up 7 horribly. 8 was blah. 9 was actually a really fun little par 3. So they kind of, it felt like they shoehorned 9 in there. It's a 150-yard hole. It's 10 yards downhill, 5 yards downwind typically. So you're playing like 130, and the green's kind of small. It just feels like the smallest possible footprint for a par 3. It's really kind of cool the way that they worked it in there. And then you kind of make the turn. 10 and 11 are still on the other side of kind of the demarcation of the property. So the first 11 holes are on one side. The remaining 7 are kind of off to themselves. And you play 12 and 13 kind of parallel to the resort, and you're making your way toward the beach. And you go over a roadway. You play a par 5, 10, which is pretty easy. Generally speaking, I mean, it took me 3 rounds to birdie it, but it's easy. And then 11, which is the hardest hole in the golf course because it's the most visually intimidating tee shot other than 17. And then you go over a cart path, or kind of the road, the unpaved road, and you get to 12, and it just suddenly changes. Like, all of a sudden, it's sand. It's not rocks. And you play a par 5. It's a pretty resorty par 5. You just hit it out there, get it on the green, make your birdie if you can. And then the par 3, 13th, is kind of the culmination of this march toward the beach. It's a 130-yard shot, not very long hole, pretty simple green, a little bit ridge in the back, kind of builds up in the back. But you're not in those two holes interesting for the architecture. You're in those two holes because you're hitting toward the water. You're like, wow, that's really cool. And you kind of, I mean, of course, there's not a ton going on at the resort. I mean, it's fairly new, and it's a fairly quiet place to begin with. It's kind of the vibe. It's relaxing. It's not a party place. And so we went alongside the resort, just kind of looked at it, played the holes, and then you kind of make your turn back. And now you're building up to 17, which is the hole probably anybody who's heard of TPC Denzante Bay has heard about. And you play 14, 15, 16, and they're all sub-400-yard par 4s from the tees we played. And 15 and 16 are, 15 is not really drivable, but 16 is darn close. And you can just kind of have a lot of fun on those couple of holes. And those are still really cool views. 15, you play like uphill, like toward probably the tallest mountain that you can really feel like you can see and experience. And it's just a really cool setting for the hole. And then you play 16, again, uphill, a little bit more uphill. And you get past the green, you play the hole, and you're driving on the cart path. And they set this up brilliantly. This 17th hole was not part of the original plan. And at some point, somewhere along the way, someone suggested putting this hole here. And thank God that they did, because it makes the golf course. So you drive over kind of this hill, this crest, and you get the reveal. and it's this peninsula par three, and it on three sides it just drops off basically a literal cliff into the Sea of Cortez, and it's a 115 to 145 yard shot depending on the day, the tee box, the wind, all that stuff, and it feels like such a small, tiny target, but you stand on the tee box and you just marvel that you're getting a chance to play a hole like this, and it's really special. I mean, it is really cool. I mean, I've been at Pebble, I've been to Seven at Pebble, haven't played Pebble yet, but been there a bunch of times, and it has a similar feel. I mean, it's just where nature and man-made kind of come together, and it just feels perfect. And then I put four balls in the ocean the first day, which is really where I blew up to the 77. And it kind of captured your attention. And you know you're building up to it through the entire round. You know you're going there. And it's not like 17 in Sawgrass in that way. You're fearing it. I mean, maybe in a sense you are, but because you could go, if you don't hit the green, there's really not a bailout. There's a bunker front right that catches the kind of almost on the green shot. Other than that, you are dead. I mean, there are bunkers around the back, but that ball ain't going in there. That's going over the cliff. And then when we took a boat ride the next day, you kind of could see the way that was constructed. They took us on the boat to that part of the cliffs, and you could see the way that it was built. Really cool. Really cool to see the drainage and how it all kind of worked out. But that hole, I could play that every day for the rest of my life and would be a happy man. Just, oh, amazing. So 18 is the closer, and you have to head back to the resort, right? I mean, you kind of have to turn around off the cliff, and you come back, and you play a downhill, very much downhill, par 4 is the finisher. It's a fun hole because it's a semi-blind tee shot. If you hit the ball a long way, you can just pound it, and you'll have a 340, 350-yard drive just because of the nature of the shot. So it's really cool. I mean, it's a little underwhelming to end the course on that after you just did what you did on 17, but it's still a really solid hole with really good views of the resort and the water. It's just a good golf course. And I typically am not a fan of Rees Jones. I mean, pretty much everything that he's ever done, I kind of not liked for U.S. Open purposes. And for this, I came away a big fan. He got it. He really did. He nailed it. He nailed exactly what a resort course should be. He nailed what the hole should be for this setting. He had the right routing. It just built up the right way. It built up to different points. It didn't build up to one hole. It built up to the green complex on 2 with a tee on 3. Then it built to 5. Probably really built to 5. But then it builds up to 9, which is a cool view. Then it builds to 13, and then it builds to 17. So there are 4 or 5 different points in the round where you're like, oh, it's coming. It's going to be really cool. And it is. And right now it's about $200 per round to play there. So if you're a resort guest, obviously you're going to be there. You're willing to spend the money. It's not that bad. They want to increase that over time to like $350 over the years. That's their long-term goal. I don't know if they'll ever get that. I guess it kind of depends on the popularity of the resort, right? But it was a really cool place. I can't tell you how much fun I had there. The pools were great. People were chill. I haven't played with a resort guest. Arnie came and joined us. And he's from Oregon. And we played the final round together on Sunday. Had an awesome time. It was a really cool group of people. Not just the media folks I really enjoy getting to spend time with, but also just people we met at the resort. And I've never seen like more hugs and dap-ups of total strangers. It was like a little community because you were kind of in on this little secret that not everyone really knew about yet. And it was pretty cool. So I would highly recommend that if you're looking to do something just a little bit different. And maybe you're not going to do something different. Maybe you do the same thing you do all the time. But if you're, especially on the West Coast, kind of from the middle half of the United States over, and you're looking to do something different, especially in these kind of months where it's not the best weather here, I would honestly tell you to go look at the Villas del Palomar. The rates are pretty reasonable. I think the Golf Advisor is running a package right now where they're going to have Janela and Brad Klein there, and you can stay there. It's like $500 a night with rounds of golf included. That's about right. If you kind of do it right, you can kind of get about $200 a night for the rooms and then $200 for the round. You know, that's pretty reasonable, I think. That's not a bad deal. So it's very, very manageable. The flights are not terribly expensive. If you've got a little vacation you like to plan out, I would recommend that you go take a look at them. Go take a look at the resort. So I hope you enjoy this. I hope you enjoy these last couple of podcasts. As I've tried to talk about places I've played and experiences I've had, I love your feedback on it. Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com is my email. You can find me on Twitter @RyanBalanchi. If you hate them, let me know. I mean, just as much as you like them, let me know. But hopefully you like these kinds of things, these kinds of reports. So we're not talking about pro golf all the time. We don't have to have a guest all the time. I can do some pretty cool things every now and then. I want to share those experiences with you. Speaking of cool experiences, this weekend I'm going to Myrtle Beach. I think I mentioned that. And we're going to do Caledonia and True Blue in the same day. Fortunately, we're going to do True Blue to kick it off in the morning and then Caledonia in the afternoon to get to see the sunset of Caledonia. That's going to be awesome. Very, very cool. Very excited for that. Mike Strantz is the absolute best. If anytime you get a chance to play Mike Strantz course, do it. Just do it. Doesn't matter. Do it. And so we'll report back a little bit back on that. We'll have, you know, maybe four or five more shows through the remainder of the year to try to get through kind of early December, maybe a little bit of recap stuff, have a couple guests on, have some fun, and then we will take off better half of December and kick things back up in January when the PGA Tour schedule resumes and Hawaii, and we kind of get this season going again. But if you do listen to this show through iTunes, and most of you do, then really appreciate if you head to the iTunes page for us, either in the podcast app or however you access us. Give us 5 stars. Helps us reach more people. We always appreciate those 5-star reviews. Although someone recently gave us a 1-star review. I think they were kind of spiteful about something, but not sure what. Anyhow, we appreciate your time. Appreciate you listening to us and the support of the show and of GNN as well. And I've been Ryan Balanchi. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.